Think of like the pyramids of Giza, yeah? It weighs around 5.5 million tons, and that's roughly the equivalent of how much electronic waste humanity produces. The bacteria eat away all the gold and poop this purple goop. And that purple goop, they scoop it up and melt it, and it's pure gold.
Herzlich willkommen zur zweiten Folge von Das gehört skaliert, dem Podcast mit Ideen und Lösungen für Planet und Menschheit auf dem Weg in eine bessere Zukunft. Mein Name ist Laura Henke, ich bin Coachin für Innovationskultur und leidenschaftliche Sammlerin innovativer Ideen mit Sinn, die ich hier im Podcast mit euch teilen möchte. Heute spreche ich mit Antonio Christoph über IT-Sustainability, also Nachhaltigkeit in der Informationstechnologie. Dieses Gespräch ist mir eine besondere Freude, denn Antonio hat nicht nur die spannende Gründungsgeschichte eines, ja, grünen IT-Startups zu erzählen, mit dem er durch Höhen und Tiefen ging, bis zum entscheidenden Aha-Moment und der schließlich folgenden Übernahme durch Google. Seine ganze Leidenschaft gilt dem Thema Elektroschrott und wie man dessen Entstehung vermeiden oder zumindest verzögern kann. Faszinierend finde ich aber vor allem, dass Antonio das Thema vom gesamten Prozess des Gerätelebenszyklus ausdenkt und sich damit beschäftigt, wie man den Berg an alten Platinen auch wieder rückbauen kann, und zwar aus technischer und wirtschaftlicher Sicht. Das Gespräch findet auf Englisch statt, also falls du nicht alles verstehen solltest, gibt es am Schluss nochmal eine Zusammenfassung auf Deutsch. Und nun viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Today we're talking to, yeah, learn more about IT sustainability, I guess is the word of the day.
Yeah. I think it's a useful frame of reference, definitely. And yeah, it's something I've specialized in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. So I guess should we start with a little kind of like a background thing or like segment?
Yeah, I was about to ask. Maybe, yeah, I've been thinking it would be good to hear, like, who are you? What are you doing? And how did you get to what you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. Yes, my name is Antonio, and it's a weird one, I guess. Actually, I was born and raised in Bulgaria, and in high school I used to buy stolen Apple goods like laptops and iPods. The iPods were the hot thing like back then, and fix them up and sell them to kids from other schools. And that's how I got into tech. My parents didn't encourage me for obvious reasons, pursuing that. And I actually, after I graduated in Bulgaria, I went to the UK and then graduated uni there with a law degree. And I actually was a lawyer or a paralegal. Like, have you seen Suits, the series?
I've had it on my radar for a while, but, you know, time. So
yeah,
maybe I should check it out, like, a couple episodes.
I don't watch series, but, like, I've seen two episodes, and Meghan Markle, obviously you know who she is. So if you watch Suits, I basically had her job. And as a paralegal, you don't get your own office. That's ridiculous. That doesn't happen. That's only in the movies. And she got one in the, like, she had one from the beginning, which is, I don't know, I think it's possible. Anyhow, but yeah, after I graduated uni, I did like a year and a half in the legal industry and like one of the best law firms and all that. But it was just not my thing, you know, laundering money for rich people and all that. But you know, it was all legal. It's just immoral, I guess. Yeah. After that, like, I decided to take a few months and just do some internships in something else and just learn some new skills, because I decided I didn't want to be part of the legal industry. I guess it's not as glorious as it seems in Suits. Definitely not like that. The second internship I did was a little fledgling company, British company called Flint Innovations. And what they were doing there was trying to use Chrome OS as open source to create another fork. So that's kind of like, you've got like Chromium, which is like a repository, like think of it as a bank of code for a bunch of geeky people around the world to contribute to. And that open source is actually the backbone of Chrome OS, which obviously powers Chromebooks. And what later became CloudReady. It's an operating system that you put on old computers, like an old Windows device, and it turns it into fast and secure and reliable Chromebook with the same user interface, same user experience, same level of security, antivirus, and integrated antivirus, if I may add. That's a big differentiator. But anyhow, I joined that little startup, and 6 months turned into 5 years, I guess. And yeah, we the British company, Flint, it was bigger when I joined. It was like 7 or 8 people, and a lot of the directors had their money pulled into the company. But like a few months into the internship, they kind of pulled away, and they went back to their home countries. And we were out with a bit of tech and no money, and we went unpaid for 6 months, and we actually had to close our office and move. Our office was in the National Theatre, so they have fantastic, very cheap tea, but very high quality, and the Wi-Fi is decent. So our office was there for a bunch of months. And we were trying to, it was just the three of us left. Will, another colleague that he was hugely instrumental into just giving me a chance, but also into developing the product into what it is. Geary, he was one of the developers from the original British team, and myself. And we tried to raise money, and we actually got some investors. And at one point in early February, I think, we had to make a decision. So we either had to take some investor money, which would not have been enough. We either had to close shop. Obviously, that's always a high probability event. And then we could have merged with our only competitor at that time, a company called Neverware, based in the US. And we were debating this, and I think it was exactly today is the 2nd of Feb. So around this day, kind of 5 years ago, Geary called us, and he kept it on the low, but he had his first child. And then we sat down and we were like, guys, this is it, like major decision. We can't have Geary risk his future and that of his child with like being unpaid for 6 months. So we're not taking the investors' money. We are merging with Neverware, and that's what we did. And Will flew to the US and closed the deal. And early March, we became part of Neverware. We became Neverware Europe. Yeah, fast forward. Yeah, we did some great things as part of Neverware. We had some tremendous sales in both enterprise and education. We managed to convert plenty of devices into Chromebooks and salvage plenty from the dumpsters. And it was fantastic. You know, early 2020 with like the pandemic just happening, it was actually a great time to be at Neverware in terms of we were in demand. Like a lot of people figured out like they didn't have enough money to purchase new devices for homeschooling and stuff. We became a very obvious solution. We had some great engagement from central government. It was just a great year. And to kind of top that year off, we actually became part of Google. So Google has always been one of the main investors at Neverware. And then later on, we just got acquired by in 2020. Yeah, I've spent the last year as part of Google. And for like the past month or so, I've you know, been a part of a different company. You know, it's called the Center for Creative Teaching, and it's based in Bulgaria, where I'm born, when I was born and raised. And I figured out the pandemic would be a great time to move back. And also with like use the contractual arrangements with Google and the opportunity provided to move back home and kind of establish myself here. And actually, I've got a great card trick to kind of summarize the whole journey, if I may. Would you care for me to show it to you?
Yes, please, before I dive into all of the questions I have, but let's do that as a sort of an interlude before we dive into like heavy tech stuff.
Yeah, so this is like something I developed because, as I said, with the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of people were glued to their screens and we couldn't do presentations and stuff. People started doing a lot of Zooming and all that, and a lot of the presentations were boring. And I decided to figure out a way to, you know, differentiate my pitching. So I go into card magic. And this is like a special trick I developed just to illustrate the journey. So so I've got a bunch of playing cards. You know, I'll just do a trick called twisting the aces. Or originally was done with with only the aces, but you know, this is my kind of take on a classic trick. So as I said, I started off as an intern at a company called Neverware. So a few years into that, we actually became part of a much bigger company. I think you recognize that logo as an employee, you should.
It's the Google logo for anyone only listening right now. So we see a deck of four cards, like for the audio only version of this, and the video will be on YouTube. And the first card, so the deck was like with the back ends up and then shuffled. And then the first card was Neverwhere, and now we see the Google logo.
Indeed. And then what I'm doing is I'm twisting the cards into, you know, something else. So, and then as I said, I was a Googler until recently, and now we're twisting the cards again to reveal the company I'm currently working for. It's called the Center for Creative Teaching. Yeah, just a little kind of the on the card, you can see the logo and a little kind of CCT. Yeah, just the letters. So the fourth card is actually the hardest to do. It's very hard to pull off, and it's also like the hardest one in the deck. So I'm gonna twist the cards not once, but twice, and then we'll see. So this is the hardest card to pull out of the deck, and it's a card of the future. And as you can see, it's blank for now. And I hope to, next time you invite me to the show, I hope to have something very beautiful to draw on it as well. So yeah, that's my little trick, my journey. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, wow, thank you so much. This is super lovely for the video version of it. And yes, please, you ping me once you have something on this card, right? And then we'll make it happen. Yeah, chapter two.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I'm also aware that, like, we started this discussion with talking about IT, sustainability and all that. So I actually have another magic trick to show you, which is my favorite magic trick with old computers. I've got my trusty Lenovo ThinkPad T470 here. You know, it's like, I don't know, I think the model is like 5 years old, and it used to be rubbish with Windows and run for, it used to boot up in like, I don't know, 2-3 minutes. But I've installed CloudReady, our product that turns old computers into Chromebooks on it. And voila, now it takes like 10 seconds and I can log in with my Google credentials and it's a Chromebook for all intents and purposes.
Wow.
So yeah, my little computer magic that I love doing.
That is so nice. So now we've basically seen the journey and the end result of that journey kind of in one magic trick session. Across mediums. That is so cool. What I would love to get into before we like get a bit more techy is, because when you described how you were faring at that little startup and you closed the office and you moved into like the theater cafe and stuff, I've been thinking, because I've been in startups and like, if I hear like, hey, we have to close the office because we run out of money, like I'm out of there. So what kept you staying with them?
I like, I've spent a lot of nights asking myself that. Now it's a lot easier, but like back then, obviously, it was harder because not just the company, but ourselves, we were running out of money. And I remember like days before we closed the deal with Neverwhere, we were talking with Will, and he was supposed to go to New York, obviously, and fly there and stuff. And we were discussing, okay, how are we going to finance this? We were like, okay, let's go through our bank accounts. And I had £526.73 in my bank account. And I was the richer of from both of us. Like I was the richer one, which is shocking. And anyhow, like we ended up borrowing the money from his parents, and so we could like fly there. And I think we combined it with we got lucky that he had to go to the New York Marathon or something. Like he booked it. So anyhow, we were out of money, and ourselves as well. Like personally, we were broke. But the fact was that like we just fell in love with the bloody act of like tinkering with old computers all day. And it was, we believed what we were doing was meaningful, at least to us. Before we closed the deal, we just managed to get our first customer and like, you know, paying, and like they had the trial and they were blown away. To this day, it's one of the flagship schools at Connaught. So when we went there, like they had these 120 odd devices, an HP 625, I believe, was the model. So they're kind of like, you can look them up online. They're fairly rugged, but they were using Windows, and those devices were sitting in like these cupboards, or trolleys rather, and they were not used much. So when we talked to the teachers, they used them, I think, 21 times throughout the whole year, because you can imagine how many lessons and all that stuff, and they only used them 21 times in the whole year. And then we put our operating system on those devices, and they started working immediately. And the feedback was tremendous. After a week, in the first week, they told us they've used them in 26 lessons that week. So those devices went from being used, 21 times in a year, in a school year, to being used 26 times in a bloody week, which is like, you can't even chart, like you can't even like draw that on a chart. Like, it's crazy.
Geometric growth right there.
Yeah. Like just. It's unbelievable. I'm at a loss even now when I think about it. Yeah, so we knew we had something valuable, and it was hard to give it up. It was not like even after we became Neverware, there were still times when, like a few times when we nearly went bankrupt. It was a bigger company. It was more serious. It was just not just like a bunch of people playing with old computers all day. It was okay, like we're paying bills, people have families and stuff. We knew we had something valuable, and I think that kept us together. And I can't like remember any us arguing about money or anything like that. It was just, we just have to do what we have to do to keep this going. It was a good journey, and I mean, it ended for me, but sort of. In the new company I'm part of, CloudReady is still center of mind for me, and still the biggest part of my strategy for driving Google adoption on the Balkans, and hopefully in Central and Eastern Europe in general. So, it's just like the product became something dear to our hearts, and it was great for our users. Like they couldn't believe it. They couldn't see themselves going back to Windows. It was impossible to them. And that's how we knew, okay, like we're not sure about product market fit, but damn, we've got like this amazing product that's stable, and like it can do. A lot of people talk about a digital transformation, and like every other company talks about it, but we actually figured it out. Once you go from using a device 21 times in a year to using it 26 times in a week, that's the definition of transformative in my book. Like a bit of belief and a lot of stupidity kept us going, and it was a great journey.
Did you have that vision already when you were sitting there, kind of sure, like, this is a cool thing, like, let's sit it out? Did you, like, envision people all of the, or like, with the school, like, all of a sudden enabling device usage? Or did that come when you had your first customer experiences and saw them and went, like, holy moly?
Well, I think we first experienced it in the office, because when I started as an intern, I had to learn all this from scratch. Obviously, I didn't come from a kind of a technical background, like a uni background. Like, I'm not a Stanford graduate or anything, but Will wasn't either, and that was a remarkable thing. He was an accountant that was good with computers, and I was a bloody lawyer, decent with computers. He's definitely the more technical one. Just to learn how to pitch the product and how to, have trial sessions. Our office was in a WeWork. It was a shared space. So I just ran around and showed the laptop to my old laptop to a bunch of people, and they were blown away. And that's how we figured it out. I remember taking that device to dates and stuff, and the girls couldn't believe. Like, yeah, they were just blown away, because people used to tell me, like, wow, you actually have something. Like, a lot of people talk about digital transformation. Like, a lot of our friends were part of PwC. Like, Will was ex-PwC as well. And he spent time in those digital transformation departments. And none of them produced anything close to what we did. Just a bunch of people getting together and playing with old computers, which is mind-bending when you even think about it.
All the more so if you hear that, okay, we were an accountant and a lawyer who like to dabble with tech in their free time, and this is what came out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, yes, when the other kind of thing, great thing was actually we one of the things we loved when we became part of Neverware was that we professionalized. It was no longer we were no longer a bunch of people running around London trying to raise money or and just talking. It was like, okay, we have to figure out whether we're going to use Stripe for payments. How do we deal with return policies and blah blah blah? And we had to professionalize very very hard. That was a great moment when we just joined Neverware. But yeah, the whole point was it's not just about like coming up with an idea. Like I'm sure everyone has 1,000 ideas. We did execute. Like we did have a lot of the things we did in the Flint days. We just professionalized and kind of leveled up, and we were able to do as Neverware, and it was amazing. You see the arc of an idea. You follow it through the different stages of the company. Yeah, it started off as a great idea when we were just a little startup, and then now with a budging SaaS company, that idea develops and does completely different when you test it.
So you basically started dabbling with the tech, or they started and then you came along, and then first couple of trials, it was kind of, oh, this is neat. Oh, we've got something going. Oh, we're showing it around. Yeah, we really got something going. So you got this like closed feedback loop of doing something, getting feedback and so forth. And then having the first actual customers where you see sort of a more scaled rollout, like here's 125 devices. And now the school is doing digital teaching versus, we have a bunch of devices in a drawer, but never use them because they're clunky.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier already something along the lines of keeping devices off the dump.
Yeah.
To like maybe bring this back into IT sustainability. How does putting a version of Chrome OS onto an old Windows device, what does that have to do with IT sustainability? How connect the dots for me here, for the listeners?
It's very simple. So, Windows devices with Windows are kind of generally developed to run for 3 years, 3 to 4. If you ask kind of a professional IT admin, they've got a thing called the TCO calculation. So the TCO stands for total cost of ownership. And that means, yes, you buy the device, but the buying price of the device is only, like in the case of Windows, is only 25% of the total cost of ownership calculation. So the rest comes from antivirus, comes from additional software you have to put on the device, maintenance, a big thing. And also a thing that's very underestimated is, on average, enterprise customers and call centers lose up to 3 hours a week from, and they even have it in their co-agents timesheet as a buffer time for patches and updates for Windows. So, you've experienced this, the wheel of doom thing, Windows is being updated and like a wheel turns and turns and turns. And it's called the wheel of doom. Bloody hell. Who came up with that one? And then the perception, so you perceive it as your device becoming slower, but it's not true. Like the CPU and the GPU, what they are, it's just over time with every patch and every update, Windows becomes heavier for your internals to bear Windows. But what we did, generally speaking, Chromebooks are a lot more underpowered than Windows devices, but they perform a lot better just because the Chrome OS, the operating system, is far more lightweight. Like you boot up a Windows device and you turn on like one tab and your CPU usage is in the 70s, instead of like 70%. With Chrome OS, you can switch on like 50 tabs and your CPU usage would be 20 because of sandboxing and like a bunch of other principles. But the idea general is Chrome OS is much more lightweight, so it can run on less powerful hardware. You don't need as much CPU, you don't need as much GPU, which is like, those are the big expensive bits in a device, the ones that draw the most power. So extrapolating from that, if you can turn all devices into Chromebooks, then naturally you extend their life because like the lighter software can run on all the inferior hardware. We figured out from like doing calculations and stuff and trials and errors that putting CloudReady on an old computer can extend its life up to 13 years from its date of manufacturing. So you take this Windows device that was supposed to run for 3 years and you quadruple the lifespan with CloudReady. I've been debating this for years and I'm not sure, like, we should definitely not call it recycling, but there's just not a better word for it. What we do, because we essentially prolong the life of a device rather than recycle it, as in, because when you say recycling, you imagine like a can of Coke and you crush it and then you can salvage the aluminium and, you know, recycle it. It's not quite like that. It's more of a software tune-up that extends the, well, I'm diminishing what we did, but, you know, the point is it prolongs the life of a device significantly. And that's how we keep the devices out of a landfill. And I guess we can come back to that. And I think it's a great point. Maybe we can discuss it, but like neither my colleagues nor our customers were terribly keen on how sustainable the devices become. They were more keen on the kind of like the financial gains, how much money we can save them, which is fine. Like we've figured out, we appeal to the lowest common denominator, but it's, we can talk about that later. But I guess I was the keenest on IT sustainability on our team. And I tried for years to pitch them harder and our customers as well. So with the help of my colleagues, we came up with a bunch of frameworks to think about our impact. Think of like the Pyramid of Giza, yeah? Like the big pyramid. It weighs around 5.5 million tons. And that's roughly the equivalent of how much electronic waste humanity produces. Electronic waste is actually much more than that. But like the waste we produce from phones, tablets, and PCs is 5.5 million tons a year, roughly. It weighs as much as the big Pyramid of Giza. So a simple way to think of our environmental impact is through prolonging the life of devices. We, for every 10,000 devices we put Clarity on, we remove one of the big blocks from the base of the pyramid, the biggest blocks you can imagine. So that was one way to think about it. If you want to get geeky, like I've got a different example. Shall I share that as well? Or?
Yeah, maybe to sum it up first for everyone who may have gotten lost along the way because tech is not like their day-to-day. No, it's fine. So basically, you developed an operating system I can put on an old computer to make it sort of worthwhile to use again, because if the machine is old and sloppy, it's sitting in my corner so it's unused. Meanwhile, I'm probably using a newer device, and eventually all of these devices mm-hmm. go on the landfill, and that's usually after 2, 3, 4, maybe yes. 5 years. And because everybody's doing that, the whole world, we produce a pyramid full of consumer device electronic garbage every year, just because these devices give up after 3 or 4 years. So that's prolonging the life of the device. We produce a quarter of a pyramid now, like instead of the whole pyramid.
Yeah, well,
does that make sense?
Yes,
in layman's terms.
Yes, although I'd love for our impact to be measured as a quarter of the whole pyramid. Unfortunately, we're not quite there. But
if everybody would do it that way,
like
assuming every old device, once it starts getting slow and being like, yeah, this is inconvenient to use, we'll slap Neverwear on, we keep using it at full speed, what you said, like 26 lessons a week instead of 21 a year, and like really use it. And then after the, what was it,
13 years? From the date of manufacturing.
The thing can live.
So
after 3 years of Windows, 10 years of Neverwear.
Yeah, you can put it.
Then it goes on the big pile, physically. And if everybody would do it that way, we'd have a quarter of a pyramid. Maybe now, since not everybody's doing it that way, you make a dent into the pyramid.
Like
it's one stone less. And your goal is to, maybe with every new pyramid that we produce 1 year after the other, it's less and less stones until we're basically there.
Yes, and it's an unintended consequence, but what we are doing is we're essentially buying time for other people to kind of... So this is like, Clarity is not the final solution. We've talked at length with my colleagues about this. It can't be. Because as you said, after those 13 years, we might not be able to extend its life anymore. Like the 13 years thing is a very artificial line. It's a best guess that we could come up with our team, and a best guess that we could prove we can extend the life to that extent. But many devices go beyond that. But the point is, we're buying time essentially, either for that team or for someone else, or Google now that own the technology can come up with a better solution regarding what to do with the rest of the pyramid. Yeah, we've worked with people like Circular Computing and a company called Mint Innovations, and I can tell you a bit more about that. But that's kind of like the future, that those people are thinking about the next steps. So they are the future. We're kind of state of the art, the present, the best we can do about this landfill problem. And if you want to see like the best thing you can, if you want to visualize the problem, yes, check out the Great Pyramid, but you can also check out Accra in Nigeria. So it's ACCRA. So it's a town in Nigeria where a big chunk of that pyramid goes there. And like you can see the millions upon millions of devices piled one on top of the other and just leaking toxic stuff. Because generally speaking, like electronic waste is a single digit percentage of the overall waste humanity produces, but it accounts for 70% of all the toxic stuff, all the toxic waste. So that's why we need the devices of the landfill, because it's an underused asset. So it's wasteful not to use it. And two, it can be toxic. Literally.
So we're basically talking about a multi-step process, and like your step, like with the software you made, like that's the first step to just keep the device in use for as long as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're still producing pyramid stones, and we have to figure that out after all.
Yeah.
And so now other people are picking up where you left off,
Yes. Basically,
and finding solutions for the next step. So what's going on there? You mentioned circular computing and Mint. Like what are they doing?
Yeah, actually, the device I showed you is something my friends from Circular Computing sent me. So last year, I helped them a lot. We did a big reveal event for a new benchmark. So think of all the stickers when you buy yogurt, there's a sticker saying, oh, this is like a bio yogurt, like certified bio yogurt. Or when you buy chocolate, this is like jungle friendly or something. You know, those stickers. Last year, I helped them and with Google's assistance to launch this kind of certification. And they were the first company to receive it, the UK government granted to them. But like the for their great work. So the device I showed you, this one is very special, not just because it's bearing the operating system, but because it's a circular computing device. So this laptop, let's imagine it was at PwC and it was used for, I don't know, 3 to 4 years by some poor analyst. And and they either got sick and tired of it, or they were just like, look, I need a better device, whatever. Like the usual policy in big companies is to change devices every 3 years, because the theory is, again, back to the TCO, the total cost of ownership, the theory is after the third year, it's cheaper to replace the device than to keep extending its life.
Oh, because maintenance costs keep rising, because in the first year, it had a minor problem, now it has problems all the time, so we're thrown out, buy a new one.
And 90% of the time, it's not a problem of the hardware necessarily, but it's just kind of poor architecture on Windows side and stuff like, you know, the antivirus leaking. Whereas that's the cool thing about Google and like Chrome OS, like stuff like that. You don't pay for the antivirus because it's integrated. And first, it's a better security model, but second, you don't pay for it. And it's like you've got the best security team in the world doing your antivirus rather than some random company. But yeah, back to the point. So this device, yes, was like, let's imagine it was in the hands of a poor PwC analyst for like a bunch of years. And then they went to Circular Computing and they put it through their facility. And the laptop undergoes 358 steps and comes out looking brand new. So I'm not, like, you can see the chassis and the screen are spotless. So they've got like this foam they put on the chassis, the plastic bit here that covers all the cracks and all that stuff and makes it look pristine. And the screen is the technology they have is like, imagine the screen as an onion. It has layers, and they figured out you can get the top layers off and plaster new layers on top and make it look brand new. It is a brand new screen for all intents and purposes. It doesn't have any scratches on it. Like the internals, if need be, can be upgraded, but I purposefully told them, just give me your kind of weakest device, in a sense, like least CPU, least GPU. still make it work because of Clarity. That's what they do. They make old computers like this look and feel and work. And even like when I opened it from the box, it smelled brand new, which is tremendous. This device can be sent to PwC or another company, and they can, for all intents and purposes, even with Windows, it works like a brand new device, and it can work for another 3 years at least. Please put Clarity on it and use it for 13, but, you know.
Okay, so once a device is in a condition where I'm like, yeah, the hardware is no good, like I have to throw it out, don't throw it out.
Yes.
Give it to Circular Computing and they'll basically do their magic in, what was it, 300-something work steps?
Yeah.
358 single steps to like make sure to like repair plastic and repair screen and all of that. And then the device is basically like good again for another 3 years on Windows again, I guess. And then slap Neverware on it and extend it for as long as
exactly.
You can.
Circular Computing called the process remanufacturing, which is, it's something they've come up with. It's an interesting term, but like the idea behind it is, yes, you don't manufacture the device from scratch. You take the device as it is and you make it brand new. So the problem with the refurb industry and why more people don't use refurb devices is refurb companies classify those devices in classes A, B, C, depending on the quality of when they receive them. And then they kind of tune them up a bit and then sell them as class A, B, or C, like depending on how well preserved the device is. Whereas what Circular Computing does is they say, look, there's no classes. Like every device comes out of our factory is class A plus. You know, it doesn't matter what condition it was initially. It only matters that once it comes out through that process, it's going to be A plus. You know, they standardize the whole process, which is great.
Okay, wow. So you basically get a good as new device with less material going in there as you would in a completely new device.
Yeah, minimal. You use minimal materials and like you save 1,000 liters of water because that's how much it takes to produce a device, and then 360 kilos of emissions it takes to produce a laptop. So to put it into perspective, another way we figured out how to think about how to quantify our impact at Neverware and as a Google team. So I've been a few times to New York because obviously that was where HQ is. A trip from London to New York and back produces 970 kilos of CO2 per seat. So I've flown twice. And so it takes for me to put Clarity on three devices to offset my the emissions I've produced on a single flight to New York and back. Another way to you can quantify.
Just saying, interesting to think about it that way, to offset flights with refurbishing devices. I know that we've talked before and you mentioned that there's another really cool solution on the horizon. So even a Neverware and Circular Computer device will give up eventually. Some cables will just burn through and that's the end of that.
Yes.
What are we going to do with that? Like ultimately right now they end up in the landfill, but you're right. Like even if we minimize the pressure on the landfill, it still builds up. So what's out there that might help?
Yeah, exactly. So there is a kind of like an end game or an end solution I figured out very, very recently. And it's a company called Mint Innovations. It's, I think, either Australia or New Zealand. I tend to think it's Auckland, New Zealand is where they're based. And I've spoken to the team a bit. Yeah, it's amazing. So what they do is, so this is one of the reasons why I got hooked on playing with old devices, because I always talk about it in terms of, even when they were interviewing me for Flint, we were talking about how can we scale this up to be a recycling solution so I'm very interested in the contents of gold in the device, because my dad used to be a goldsmith, so I love gold. It's in my blood and in my hair. I'm very blonde.
That's for sure because of your dad's job, I'm sure.
I grew up like playing with gold and stuff and like trinkets and rings and whatnot, and I used to help him in the shop to run. Like, you have to, every piece you buy or sell, you have to test for the how many carats the gold is. Like, so in diamonds, carats is a measurement of weight. But when you sell gold, a carat is a measure of purity. So essentially, 24 carats means 1/24th of that piece of gold has something else, but the rest is gold. So you can't have gold by itself because it's too kind of like weak and it kind of breaks apart and it's flaky. So you have to put like other metals in there to make trinkets. But there's a lot of gold in devices because gold is a superconductor. So it conducts electricity extremely, extremely well, but it's very expensive. So that's why we don't put it in our wires and stuff. Otherwise, it would have been great. But there's like in many devices, there's up to 0.7 grams of gold. So that's quite a lot. And this company in New Zealand figured out like this ingenious method of, so they extract a lot of stuff, but the gold was very hard. So they essentially get like the motherboards and stuff and turn them into bits and pieces, and they extract whatever they can. And then you're left with a chunks of waste, and then they cover that chunk of waste with a syrup of bacteria and like whatnot, and they leave it there to kind of, and the bacteria eat away all the gold and poop this purple goop, and that purple goop, they scoop it up and melt it, and it's pure gold. It's the craziest way to extract gold. I know a lot of methods to extract gold, and a lot of them use toxic chemicals and stuff, but this is by far the most outlandish one I've heard and the best environmentally friendly one I've heard or seen.
Okay, just to back it up, we're talking about bacteria that eats and shites out gold for us to reuse.
Literally.
That is the most sci-fi could imagine things to go. But the best part is like they're already doing that or like prototyping it or.
Yeah, so their idea is to turn like the concept into like a mini factory you can put on in a container ship and like ship it overseas to a country or whatever. And do all this locally, like be very inexpensive. And places like Accra in Nigeria can then, I remember like reading an article in National Geographic when I was a kid, and I have vivid recollections of that. Like it was, they were telling that article where essentially all the electronic waste goes to much of it goes to Accra in Nigeria. And then you have people and like kids and stuff pulling out the best bits out of the motherboards and the screens and all that. And they melt them in pots. But like, and the caption under the picture was like, these people are, melting precious metals and mercury and like lead and God knows what poison in the same pot they're going to cook dinner.
No
later
way.
On.
Oh, God.
I'm like, yeah, exactly. I'm not even making it up.
That's what gets me. Like,
exactly.
I mean, not just are they breathing in fumes of like mercury and lead and whatever else, but like in the same pot. Oh,
yeah.
That is as bad as. Like, this is, like, congratulations, humanity. Like, this is our down low. Like, it can't get any worse.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. Yeah, and just extrapolate that and just think of all the, I'm sure you know people like that. Like, my cousin is like that. Every time the new iPhone comes out or the new Apple MacBook comes out, he immediately buys a new one and tosses the old one away. Well,
I think we all know these people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's a problem. A very tiny minority in the world like contributes massively to this e-waste problem just because we're obsessed with the latest and greatest technology, and we were trained that way. Like, people didn't know they had to buy the latest iPhone every year. Like, Apple's marketing team trained them to do that, which is, I want to pin the whole problem on Apple, but definitely talked a lot about Microsoft. But it's everyone's fault. Like, us as consumers, it's our fault that we're so gullible, but I guess we're also like, it's a weird problem. It's a problem of human nature and like great marketing as well, and just pure stupidity in many cases. But there are solutions. That's the whole point of this podcast. There are solutions.
I was just saying, let's after we like took quite the dive into facing what's just so wrong in the world, I think that's the silver lining we can sort of close this with, like,
yeah,
we effed up big time and we're still doing it.
Oh, yeah.
But stuff is coming in that's...
Thankfully.
Like, there's something on the horizon that we might be able to mitigate this. The question is probably, will it hinge on a startup to do its best to fix this, or will eventually... Like, I'm thinking the tech corporations that make these products, governments, like, will everybody get behind, okay, we need to focus on just shrinking this garbage pile before more people get sick, I guess,
yeah,
and nature too.
Well, I think it's the nature of, like, I know startups are, like, you know, trendy and everyone wants to talk about startups, but it might not necessarily... I don't think they are the most important bit here. Yes, so circular computing can come up with that process, but I think if Dell or Lenovo or whoever, like HP, all those companies don't adapt the same policy, we're doomed. Like, we're doomed by capitalism, by our drive to consume. And that's the beauty of little companies, that you can experiment and you can do these experiments, like, all day and every day and come up with a brilliant idea, like putting an operating system on old devices and extending their life, or come up with this ingenious method to remanufacture devices, or like bacteria that poop gold and whatnot. But it's a scale, like those solutions have to hit scale. And I don't think we would need some serious buy-in from the big OEMs, and those are like the companies that produce the devices, like the brands, you know, Lenovo, HP, etc. Probably governments as well. But honestly, I think it's up to companies like Circular Computing. And look at our journey at Neverware. Like, it was a ridiculous idea that we managed to prove and scale up to a point that it became noticeable to a big company, i.e. Google, that decided, look, this is worthwhile pursuing, and we should do that. We can't develop this, but these guys have already done it, so let's just absorb them and just give them all the tools to go out and turn every bloody device into a Chromebook if they can. It's like Pokemon, you have to catch them all, yeah. but yeah. So yeah, I think something like that has to happen. And yeah, for every OEM to adopt the methods of circular computing, for us to have a chance at, like, reducing that pyramid to bloody mounds.
Maybe it's a matter of politics. Either companies picking it up by themselves because they get it, or politics by means of making laws, making them do whatever to get the circle going of regaining these materials and putting them into new devices before. Because that's also another thing. If we don't do that, like, we keep digging up, I don't know, central China and places where there's, like, I mean, if we don't get that gold or whatever's in there, like, we've got to dig it up from somewhere else constantly new. And that's only, that'll only go so far.
I just remember we were trying to classify what kind of problem it is. Like, what caused this? Is it, like, marketing, or is it like human stupidity or human nature or whatever? I think it's a business problem above all, and it's like, it's not something like an NGO can solve. I think it's a classic business problem, and fundamentally it's a problem of how do you make money out of devices. The only method we currently have, proven method of making money out of devices, is by producing them and forcing people to change those devices every 3 years or year and a half to 3 years. That's the only way we've figured out so far. And I think the onus is on companies like Circular Computing to prove we're trying this. We're putting more and more devices through these cycles of usage, and they're getting more use, and it's actually profitable. And once they figure it out, then I think then the big boys can come in and scale up what they're doing. I think ultimately that's... I wish them the best of luck. Honestly, I'm praying they figure it out. And I would certainly be trying to sell more of these devices in my current company. I have one of my devices. I'll bring it to pitches and stuff and try and see what, especially enterprise customers, would probably want to dig it, become more truly more sustainable, rather than just, you know, sustainability currently is just a kind of like a pretty slogan you put on your website. But this is sustainability ability to touch and measure and feel and use. And so is the OS, Clarity. So I just prefer a very practical approach. I think I alluded to in earlier in the conversation, like we try to lead with sustainability. We tried really, really hard to pitch it to investors and to clients and whoever gave us like some time of the day. And it didn't work. It's like compound interest or something like that. It's a very complex thing people don't naturally get. What circular computing proposes is, but then we switched. So we figured out, okay, you don't care about sustainability. And, you know, for the longest time, people were making money and treated damage to the environment as an externality. So why don't we try the reverse? So, okay, we're going to make money out of turning old computers into Chromebooks. And as a byproduct, we're going to keep devices out of the landfill.
So you're leading with the economic conveniences of going this way.
Exactly.
And also on the side, it's also the more sustainable route.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the takeaway for anyone pursuing selling whatever. Like, you don't lead with sustainability as sad as it is. Like, it needs to be of economic value.
Yeah.
And the sustainability needs to be like baked in.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah, the way we go into this mess is going to be the way we get out of it is we need to figure out, okay, this is the benefit to the damage or benefits to nature, unfortunately, are an extra externality because of how people are trained to think about business. I think the greatest contribution Neverware and circular computing and all these companies can have is a cultural one, okay? This is the way business has been thought at like Harvard Business School or whatever business school you go to is you figure out the production and you make it as lean as possible and it as cost efficient as possible. And the quality should be as high as possible, but the price should be as low as possible. The way to achieve this is treat environmental damage as an externality. Figure out what you need to pay to make the problem go away. Don't think about it. This is capitalism the other way around. We figured it out. We figured out how to make money in a sustainable way. We figured out this is going to be Neverware was highly profitable and before we sold it to Google. And we figured out profitability. And then we could have preached to our customers once we onboard them. Because it's apart from Clarity being cheaper than buying new device, like apart from it was just cheaper. Like using Clarity is cheaper. You don't have to buy new devices. You don't have to. In the past, you needn't pay 300 quid for a new device. You could pay £15 per year, 1.5, and use the same device as a Chromebook by turning it like by using Clarity, like buying your subscription for Clarity. And that was it. It was highly, highly economically beneficial to the end customer, like orders of magnitude. And then we could have preached to them, look, you've bought this product, fantastic, but as part of your purchase, you managed to save X amount of carbon emissions or whatever. But we could have kept all that tree hugging for the blogs and all that. Like, I don't want to diminish the whole movement, but, you know.
I know what you mean.
I'm just being facetious. Like, I'm trying to be funny.
Right.
But
right. Yeah. Virtue signaling is great, but tangible results are needed or else the virtue signaling will be pointless forever.
Yeah. To sum up. Yeah. Figure out how you can bring economic benefits to your customers, and then the rest is all the additional benefits to the environment and all that. Like, have them in mind when you design the device or the solution, but then it has to be something additional. Don't leave it there. There's no point. I hope more people find solutions like that fantastic and just become fans. There's a better way to be a consumer.
Das war die zweite Folge von Das gehört skaliert. Mit meinem Gast Antonio Christoph. Schön, dass du dabei warst. Ich persönlich muss sagen, es war ein sehr dichtes und sehr technisches Gespräch. Was mir aber auf jeden Fall in Erinnerung bleiben wird, ist der Gedanke an die Pyramide von Gizeh, die wir global jedes Jahr in Form von Elektroschrott produzieren. Und zwar, das ist das, was so erschreckend daran ist, nur in Form von Konsumentengeräten, also Laptops, Tablets, Smartphones, sowas. Da ist der ganze Abfall aus der Industrie und so weiter noch gar nicht mit drin. Ja, dieses Sinnbild ist natürlich ein sehr plakativer Vergleich, aber wenn man bedenkt, dass diese gesamte Menge überwiegend auf einigen wenigen Halden landet, unter anderem in großen Mengen auf einer Halde am Stadtrand von Accra, der Hauptstadt von Ghana, tatsächlich nicht Nigeria, wie ursprünglich im Gespräch zunächst gesagt. Ja, und Menschen laufen dort dadurch, um die wertvollen Bestandteile rauszuziehen und kochen das Ganze dann auf und atmen die Dämpfe ein und alles. Ja, ich denke, da wird deutlich, dass wir als Menschheit diese Situation so eigentlich nicht lassen können. Mir tat es daher gut, zu erfahren, dass an Lösungsansätzen gearbeitet wird. Und die eine Lösung ist zwar offensichtlich noch nicht ganz unmittelbar in Sicht, aber der Lösungsweg aus Bausteinen, den Antonio aufgezeigt hat, finde ich, macht Hoffnung. Im Grunde ist es ein Dreischritt. Aus erstens das Leben des einzelnen Geräts verlängern, so lange wie es irgendwie geht. Also nicht wegwerfen, nur weil man was Neues haben will, sondern bis zum Funktionsende nutzen oder weiterverkaufen oder eben eine andere kreative Weiternutzung anstreben, wo immer möglich. Dann zweitens, wenn ich was Neues kaufe, darauf achten, dass ich eben noch hochwertige gebrauchte oder eben general überholte Geräte nutze. Und wenn es dann gar nicht mehr geht, dann ist das eben so. Aber wir haben einfach erstmal die Zeit hinausgezögert, auch um der Entwicklung auf dem Gebiet die Gelegenheit zu geben, näher an eine effektive Lösung zu kommen. Bis hin zu dem im Gespräch erwähnten Unternehmen mit den goldfressenden Bakterien, die werthaltige Stoffe bis zum letzten Molekül rausziehen. Das fand ich wirklich am allerbemerkenswertesten. Antonio hat im Gespräch auch mehrere Unternehmen erwähnt, die im Grunde an diesen Stufen im Prozess ansetzen. Und das vielleicht der Reihe nach nochmal. Das eine ist Neverware. Das ist dieses IT-Startup, das von Antonio mit aufgebaut wurde. Und die bieten eben ein spezielles Betriebssystem an, das auf Google Chrome aufbaut, für diejenigen, die da technisch, interessierter sind. Und das sich auf langsam gewordene alte Windows- oder Apple-Rechner drauf spielen kann und die so wieder nutzbar machen kann, die sonst ungenutzt im Regal stehen würden, weil funktioniert ja irgendwie nicht mehr, dann kaufe ich doch was Neues, das Alte steht da noch. Und so nutze ich eben das Alte weiter und kaufe eben nicht so schnell was Neues. Das ist so die Idee der Verlangsamung. Das ist im Grunde so die Lösung für Schritt 1, verzögern des Produzierens von neuem Elektroschrott. Dann zweites Unternehmen, das Antonio erwähnt, ist Circular Computing. Und die bieten general überholte Computer an, wo so viel wie möglich vom alten Material wiederverwendet wird. Nach eigener Aussage sparen sie dazu bis zu 85% der Ressourcen ein im Vergleich zur Produktion eines fabrikneuen Computers. Das wäre dann also Schritt 2, also beim Neukauf auf entweder gut erhaltene Gebrauchte oder eben general überholte Geräte zu setzen. Genau, und dritter im Bund ist dann Mint, das neuseeländische Startup mit den goldfressenden Bakterien. Kaum so glauben eigentlich, dass es damit auch bereits Technologien gibt, die ein bisschen Hoffnung zumindest auf einen Rückbau des Müllbergs machen. Ja, alle Infos und Links findest du in den Shownotes zufolge. Ansonsten nicht vergessen, wenn dir der Podcast gefallen hat, abonniere ihn in deiner Podcast-App, damit du keine neuen Folgen verpasst. Und besonders freue ich mich außerdem auch über eine positive Bewertung, zum Beispiel bei Spotify oder Apple Podcasts. So finden auch andere den Podcast leichter und du trägst zur Verbreitung der guten Ideen bei. Und wenn du jemanden kennst, für die oder den das Thema der Sendung interessant sein könnte, den Link zum Teilen findest du ebenfalls in den Shownotes. Und wenn du Fragen, Anregungen oder Tipps für weitere gute Ideen hast, dann schreib mir gerne per Mail unter laura@laurahenke.de. Und nun eine gute Zeit und bis zum nächsten Mal.